Sadhguru is a yogi, a mystic, and a visionary humanitarian who works tirelessly towards the physical, mental, and spiritual well-being of all. His mastery over the mechanisms of life, an outcome of his profound experience of the self, serves as a guide in exploring the subtler dimensions of life. His scientific and logical approach has touched the lives of 7 million people from all walks of life, inspiring them to seek this opportunity within. Sadhguru is a speaker and opinion maker who is widely sought after by prestigious global forums, including the World Economic Forum, the United Nations, the World President's Organization, the British House of Lords, Tuck Executive Education, and TED, among many others.
It is an honor for me to introduce our special guest, Sadhguru Jaggi Vasudev today. Named as India's 50 most influential people, his work has transformed the lives of millions of people all over the world. Although he's known as a mystic, he explains the methods of self-transformation with simplicity, elegance, logic, and a great sense of humor. So, Sadhguru, welcome to Boston and Chai with Manju. It was a total privilege for me to attend your program yesterday. And I have to say, you completely mesmerized the audience. So, how is your interaction with the audience like?
I was not an audience.
No.
So, the thing is just this. I do not know any philosophy. Mm-hmm. I am not scripture educated. Mm-hmm. The only thing I know is I know this piece of life. Mm-hmm. I know this piece of life from its origin to its ultimate. Mm-hmm. And what I see is, if you know this piece of life, by inference, you know everything that's worth knowing. Mm-hmm. Because that is the nature of the creation. So if you know this, then by inference, you know mm-hmm. everything. Mm-hmm. In that context, when I if you call that interaction, I don't think it's interaction, it's just that I'm articulating all that their own intelligence would want to articulate, but they do not know how to articulate because they're so messed up with so many concepts, ideas, ideologies, philosophies, belief systems. So I'm just articulating what every life would naturally see. If they're uncluttered mm-hmm. by external influences. So that is the only sadhana in my life.
Now, I read that you started learning yoga when you were 11 years old, and your first class that you taught was when you were 25 years old on 23rd September 1983 to 7 students. And now you are changing lives all over the world with your concept of inner engineering and yoga. So please explain to us the essence of that inner engineering and your concept of yoga.
See, if you utter the word yoga today, mm-hmm. particularly in this part of the world, mm-hmm. people are thinking about twisting their bodies, standing on their head, holding their breath or whatever. The word yoga means union. Mm-hmm. When we say union, what we are looking at is, if you look at the fundamental longing of every human being, mm-hmm. wherever they are, they want to be something more. If that happens, something more, something more, something
right.
more, endlessly.
Right.
So if you look at it, all they want is limitless expansion.
Right.
Limitless expansion means you want everything to be yours.
Mm-hmm.
Or you want everything to be you, if that is possible.
Right.
You can either make something yours, either by conquest
mm-hmm.
or shopping,
mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. or just inclusion.
Right.
So inclusiveness happens mm-hmm. because you have allowed your life, the fundamental life energy mm-hmm. to mature into a dimension that it spreads itself. If you sit here, you can experience the entire universe as yourself. If you are in such a state, then you're called a yogi, and the method that you employ to get there is called yoga. Or in other words, it is about understanding the fundamental mechanics of life, how life happens, and what binds it and what liberates it. So inner engineering is not a concept that I make up or somebody else makes it up. It is about understanding the laws by which life is happening. So inner engineering means to structure your interiority the way you want it.
As I told you, I'm a physician, and you have described a body as, human body as an amazing gadget, okay?
Is it not as a physician?
Yes, absolutely, absolutely.
With all your education, absolutely. You still can't figure it, isn't it?
Yes, yes. There's not much we don't. So we as physicians are constantly told that yoga can make so much different in the physicality. It's very hard for us who don't know what can yoga actually help you with, what in the physical health, and what are the diseases that it can prevent, what are the diseases that it can cure, does it treat or does it heal? So could you explain some of the physical benefits of yoga first?
I would like to classify all ailments into two fundamental categories. One is infectious diseases,
right,
which is an external invasion upon
sure,
the body.
Sure, I agree.
For this, you're doing chemical warfare.
Yes.
Pharmaceuticals are chemical warfare. Right. You're poisoning them out. All right?
Right.
You're gas bombing them or chemical poisoning mm-hmm. them. It's fine. It's an extreme step we're taking.
Uh-huh.
We're poisoning ourselves also by that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all right, because otherwise, death or damage, that's
right.
a choice.
Right.
We're choosing some damage instead of
right.
death, which is a smart choice.
Okay.
But 70% of the ailments that human beings suffer mm-hmm. are self-created. That means your own body is generating this.
Mm-hmm.
Largely because, to put it very simply,
mm-hmm.
on various levels of who you are, on the level of your mind, physicality, energy, emotion, there is no ease. Most people do not know what it means to simply sit in ease. This mm-hmm. is the whole problem.
Mm-hmm.
If there is no ease, it's called right. dis-ease.
Mm-hmm. That's a great way of putting it. I like that.
So right now, you may be little mm-hmm. unease, but a continuous state of unease slowly manifests itself
yes,
as
yes.
a physical damage.
Right.
It is just like this. You're driving your car.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of driving on four wheels, you mm-hmm. drive on two wheels.
Right.
It's a little difficult to do,
right.
but you can do.
Mm-hmm.
If you do this, then one part of the car will wear out very badly.
Right.
The other part will not be used.
Sure.
Right now, this is the way most human beings are living.
Mm-hmm.
Living. They're leaning, skewed towards this or that.
Mm-hmm.
Some people are lost in thought. Some people
mm-hmm.
are lost in the compulsions of the mm-hmm. body. Some people are lost in their emotional turmoils.
Mm-hmm.
Some people are living in a very volatile state of energy.
Mm-hmm.
Like this, different states of dis-ease is happening.
Right. Right.
If one simply sits here, let's say,
mm-hmm.
this is a simple way to check. You ask your patients or you try yourself.
Okay. Okay.
Just one day, take mm-hmm. off from everybody and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Get rid of your phones, computer, television,
mm-hmm.
books, everything.
Difficult task.
Simply sit in one room.
Mm-hmm.
Eat well and simply sit, not sleeping, alert.
Uh-huh.
Just sit. Then you clearly know, 1 24-hour segment, if you sit like this, you know what is the state of dis-ease you are in.
Mm.
Whether it becomes a medically recognizable or diagnosable ailment or not,
mm-hmm.
is a question of how sturdy your constitution is,
mm-hmm.
what parts of your body are inherently weak
mm-hmm.
from your parentage or whatever.
Right. Right, genetically.
Depending upon that, it will
right.
play up in that way.
Mm-hmm.
The disease is in the system. Because there is a disease, what you are recognizing or diagnosing as a disease is more like a like an indicator flashing up.
Mm-hmm.
So in chronic ailments, whatever the symptoms that you're seeing,
mm-hmm.
they're essentially like the proverbial tip of the iceberg. Right now, modern medicine is purely symptomatic.
Mm-hmm.
So when it comes to chronic ailments, modern medicine can manage the disease for people. But they cannot remove it because the problem is not in the symptoms. The symptom is dependent upon who you are.
Right.
For the same problem, you may be showing asthma,
mm-hmm.
I may be showing diabetes, somebody else may be showing blood pressure or something like this.
Okay.
For the same stress level or for the same disease that three of us may be going through.
Right. But once somebody has a disease, I can understand the prevention part, living a healthier life. But once somebody has a disease, can yoga cure any disease? Like a lot of times we hear claims, people who have cancer have been cured by yoga. People who have certain diseases which are already established by the medical world. Are there any diseases that you feel that can be cured by yoga? Because I see back pain and a lot of things, the
spinal problems,
yeah,
essentially. See, there are certain parts of your body
right.
whose ability to regenerate
right.
is very high.
Right.
There are certain parts of your body where the ability to regenerate is
right.
not so high.
True.
So it depends which type of,
mm-hmm.
what type of manifestation, let me mm-hmm. not call it a disease.
Okay.
But the same dis-ease,
right.
what type of manifestation is happening in your body,
mm-hmm.
accordingly, what part of the body, accordingly whether it can recover quickly with certain
mm-hmm.
practice or not,
mm-hmm.
will happen. So there is no one standard, yes, we can cure everything.
Mm-hmm.
In principle, yes.
Okay.
Anything that is chronic, yes. But in practical sense, on a day-to-day practical sense,
mm-hmm.
now somebody has cancer, now I will never tell him, do yoga. I will tell him, just take the treatment.
Absolutely.
We will help you to recover from the treatment because treatment is so exerting and damaging
sure.
to the human body.
Sure.
After that, mm-hmm. so that relapses and repetitions don't happen, we can
mm-hmm.
put them on various practices. When somebody is at a risk of life,
mm-hmm.
that's not the time to do yoga. That'll be
absolutely.
Silly to do that.
Sure.
But at the same time, for various other things that people are suffering, which may not be immediately life-threatening, but over a period of time, it'll
okay.
curtail their life.
Mm-hmm.
It'll curtail the span of their life. Such things can be easily reversed with yoga.
Mm-hmm.
If you talk to me about hypertension, I would say 100%
really?
We can get you back. Diabetes, 90% to 80%, 80% of the people, we can get them back. If you talk about cardiac ailments, unless serious damage has happened,
mm-hmm.
most of the time we can get them back. These are all things which are the big killers in the world.
But a lot of what we see as physician is a lot of back pains, which we feel, which we learn that is treated.
You look at the way the American furniture is. If you sit down, it sinks. I'm bolstering myself up to sit straight. I'm saying,
okay. right.
Spine is not one piece of bone as you know
right.
it.
Right.
It is a delicate arrangement of bones.
Right.
And it is the conduit for the entire nervous system to pass
absolutely.
Through.
Absolutely.
Because in the process of evolution,
mm-hmm.
as the neurological system got more and more complicated,
mm-hmm.
nature saw it needs protection. So slowly it assembled this,
mm-hmm.
and it has various other possibilities apart
mm-hmm.
from just the way medical science is looking at it. In yoga,
mm-hmm.
the spine is seen as the axis of the universe.
Really? Okay.
Already if you have back pain,
uh-huh.
if I say you your spine is the axis of the universe, it
mm-hmm.
looks very threatening.
Uh-huh.
Why this is said is, your experience of the
mm-hmm.
universe is just the way it's happening within you. There have been things where doctors have given me a few weeks to live sometimes
uh-huh.
in this country.
Uh-huh.
They said, I'm a blue light emergency, I should not get onto your plane. But in a matter of weeks, I recovered completely by doing a few things within myself. I don't want to go into the entire process,
uh-huh.
but I went through, 18 blood tests, you know, in 18 different hospitals, yes. And some 7 MRIs, and they all said, this is it.
Really?
There's nothing we can do because we don't even know what's the cause of this.
Okay.
But in 2 weeks' time, I completely recovered. In about 21 days, I was trekking in Tibet at 18,000 feet above the sea level, okay?
That's amazing, that's amazing.
Why I'm saying this is, see, this whole entire body, you constructed from within, isn't it?
Right.
You did not build it from outside.
Mm-hmm.
This entire body you created from within. So the manufacturer of this body is within you.
Right.
So if you have access to the manufacturer, once you grasp that, fixing it is not difficult because when you're able to create an entire body, doing a little repair job is not such a big deal.
So my next question for you is something which is very common, at least in the Western Hemisphere.
Mm-hmm.
It is stress management. Everywhere you go now, even for medical conferences, there is this new thing about stress management. What I learned from you yesterday and reading is that you say that stress is our own creation. Since we created, that is where the focus should be rather than the management. Can you explain that to me?
I must tell you this. Many years ago, when I first came to the United States, wherever I went, people were talking about stress management.
Yes.
I couldn't understand this. Because in my understanding, we manage things which are precious to us.
Right.
Our family, our wealth, our business, our money. Why would anybody want to manage stress is something I could not understand. It's after a little bit of observation I understood people have concluded that stress is a part of their life.
Right.
Stress is not about your life, the activity of your life. It's not about your work. It's not about your family or relationships or whatever.
Right.
Stress is just your inability to manage your own body and your mind.
Right.
You don't know how to keep your body.
Right.
You don't know how to keep your mind. That's all that's happening. So that's happening, as I said, you have not read the user's manual. Such a sophisticated gadget. You don't have the user's manual when you do everything accidentally.
Okay. Well, we have Grey's Anatomy, but that doesn't teach us how to manage stress, right?
I don't know what Mr. Gray said, but I think he knows the anatomy.
Right.
It's only by looking into the dead body.
Right. I find it amazing that all the education we have, this is such an important part of learning as a physician, yet we are not taught that.
Because you did not go through a health course, you went through medicine.
That is true. So tell me, as physicians, how, you know, I'm part of this Indian Medical Association of New England, American Physicians. Tell us, how can we as physicians partner with Isha Foundation or with all your teachings so that we can learn and pass on that education to our patients?
So there are two dimensions to what we do. There is a certain aspect of yoga which is generally referred to as Upa Yoga. Upa Yoga means sub-yoga or useful processes.
Okay.
Yoga means there is a spiritual element in it. Upa Yoga is largely physiological and psychological benefit. If physicians want to transmit it as a part of their profession, they must do only Upa Yoga.
Okay.
If they try to transmit what we are referring to as yoga, one thing is it'll not work as a profession because you have to become that. It's not something that you learn and you teach somebody. It's never going to work like that. You must transmit it. Transmission is different from teaching. Upa Yoga you can teach.
Okay.
Yoga you cannot teach. You have to transmit. This is why in the Isha system, when somebody wants to teach in an engineering program, for example, they have to hold it above their life. Not as a profession, not as a hobby, not something that they do on the side. It must be more important than their life. Only then we allow them to teach. They're fully dedicated people right there, volunteers, that they're not paid for it, because it's very, very important to hold that as a part of your being and transmit it.
Mm-hmm.
But Upayoga can be taught by the physicians
mm-hmm.
or by paramedics or whoever is
mm-hmm.
around, because that will be useful and that is purely physiological and psychological benefits.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll do wonders.
Mm. So I want to ask you about some specific management of some things or treatment or your advice in some things which are very close to my heart. How do we overcome fear in life? You know, it could be fear of, my biggest fear is losing people I love. More than death,
you will anyway lose
health.
Them one day.
I know, but it's just...
Either they will go or you will go. Which do you want?
I want to go.
Really?
Yes, honestly. That is how big my fear is, that I would rather go myself than face the loss of my loved ones. I lost my parents 2 years ago and I'm still stuck in that zone of that, you know, that mourning that loss. So, and there are a lot of people like me, you know, who are physicians who cannot heal themselves, or they're people in ordinary lives who have fear of death, or who have different kind of fears and phobias. How do you advise that we overcome that?
Let us look at this in a very fundamental way.
Mm-hmm.
Please look at this. What is it that you're afraid of?
Mm-hmm.
You're always afraid of what will happen.
Right.
That means you're afraid of what is yet to happen.
Right.
That means you're afraid of that which has not happened.
Right.
Yes?
Right.
You're afraid of something that does not exist.
Mm-hmm.
If you're afraid of something that does not exist,
mm-hmm.
you're a physician, you're not a psychiatrist, but you know.
Right.
This is a clear
right.
qualification.
Right.
Because you're suffering that which does not exist.
But sometimes you actually have gone through the suffering also.
All right, I'll come to that.
Yeah.
But essentially fear means you're suffering something that does not exist.
But there is a possibility of
possibility is there, yes.
Right.
Possibility is there. But you're afraid, you're suffering something which is not yet.
Mm-hmm.
You're suffering something which does not exist in principle,
mm-hmm.
yes? But the possibility is there, you say.
Right.
So you're imagining things that may happen, or in other words, you're suffering something that happened 2 years ago.
Right.
That means you're suffering your memory.
Right.
You're suffering tomorrow. That means you're suffering imagination.
Mm-hmm.
So what this means is, two most valuable faculties that a human being has,
mm-hmm.
which is unique to a human being. No other creature is capable of as much mm-hmm. memory and imagination as we are capable of.
True.
But you are suffering those faculties which set you apart as a human being.
Mm-hmm. True.
So shall we take away those faculties?
No. But there should be ways to overcome that.
No, we will come to that.
Right.
See, you're talking about overcoming. You can only overcome what is there, but you are suffering what is not there.
Mm-hmm.
How to overcome that which is not there?
Mm-hmm.
What happened 2 years ago? Is it there right now?
No.
No.
But
what may happen? What may happen day after tomorrow? Is it there right now?
No.
No. So when you are suffering something that does not exist, how to overcome?
Mm-hmm.
If you overcome something that does not exist, you're really lost.
Mm-hmm.
So don't try to overcome. You just have to do some discipline within yourself. The yogic
mm-hmm.
system has enormous amount of processes
discipline.
For this, systems and methods.
Mm-hmm.
See, what this essentially means is, you have a complicated machinery here,
mm-hmm.
all right? You don't have the tools.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have the keypad to type
okay.
what you want. All kinds of things are going on the screen all the time.
Mm-hmm.
If you could clearly hold your memory separately,
right.
your imagination separately, and your present experience of life separately,
mm-hmm.
you could access it when you want, when you don't want. You can leave it. Right now it's all mixed up.
Right.
Nothing has been done about it. Nothing has been done about it.
So what is the first step that you should be doing?
If you're willing to give yourself 30 hours of focus time,
mm-hmm.
we will give you a vehicle with which you can turn inward. This is the inner engineering program, 30 hours.
Okay.
It is formatted in different ways, 1 weekend, 7 days, 7 evenings. In many ways we format it, 3 days, 4 days, 2 days, many, many ways. But essentially what we need is 30 to 32 hours of absolutely focused time. That means we will give you an experiential vehicle with which you can turn inward.
Mm-hmm.
Once you can turn inward, once you are consciously able to turn inward, when I say inward, not dissection, not contemplation,
beyond body and mind,
if you can turn inward, then I don't have to tell you, you will fix it.
Naturally,
once you have access, you'll fix it.
Yesterday you mentioned June 21st is the International Yoga Day. Tell us what is the relevance, need and the significance of yoga and the yoga day in the current world scenario.
See, first of all, having chosen June 21st is very significant because it's summer solstice.
Okay.
And if you look at it historically, it's at that time that Adi Yogi, for the first time, delivered or transmitted the science of yoga to the Saptarishis or the seven sages, who were the first seven people to attend the yoga program on the banks of Kanti Sarovar, around 13,400 feet in the Himalayas. Even today we make a trip to this lake. So it's very significant that they chose that day, and because the sun's relationship with the planet is changing on that day, it's significant because this is the sadhana pada. Actually in yoga, between the summer solstice and winter solstice, those 6 months are called sadhana pada. Between winter solstice and summer solstice, the next 6 months from December to June is called Kaivalya pada. So you have heard historically that one famous situation is where Bhishma is waiting for Uttarayana to come. He had 100 arrows shot through his body, but he still did not let his life go. He waited on a bed of arrows, waiting to leave his… to shed his body in Uttarayana, because that is Kaivalya pada. He doesn't want to leave in sadhana pada. There is a certain significance to it. As to, especially living in the northern hemisphere, how the revolutions of the planet, how it affects your system during these two phases is different, because the relationship of the planet with the sun changes dramatically. So having chosen that day, what is the significance? As I said earlier, you will see in future, you mark my words, you and me may not live long enough for this, but in future, let's say in the next 50 to 100 years' time, you will see yoga will become pervasive.
Absolutely.
As human intellects blossoms, belief systems will start weakening. People want to do something that makes sense to them. It should make absolute sense to them, and it should be scientific. And this is an absolutely scientific approach. It's non-denominational. It does not include any belief, any kind of indoctrination or dogma, or there are few cultural frills that people have added. This has been the significant part of my work, to take off all the cultural frills and present yoga as an absolute science. So this will be the future of the world. World will seek well-being by turning inward in the next 50 to 100 years. The sooner it happens, the better it is. So having declared this day, United Nations has made a statement. For the first time, 172 countries endorsed a particular resolution, which has not happened in the history of UN, okay? 172 countries endorsing a particular resolution, it's not happened ever before, but any cause. So that is a reflection of how people are looking at it. And on this International Yoga Day, which is the first one declared, 2015, every organization is trying to do its best. Government of India is doing it big, and it's become a pet project of the Prime Minister. And it's great. This is something that we've been striving for, that the leadership in the world should take to, you know, inner development.
Absolutely. On that note, I wanted to add just the revolution that yoga and the practices in India has changed in the Western world. We do a health expo every year for the last several years. Within last 3 years, this year our biggest program was that was attended was yoga. One of the biggest healthcare insurance providers in our state, in New England actually, have now introduced the Eastern Harmony program, which where yoga is a very important part of that. That has never happened before in the history. We can see that as physicians, the change yoga has brought.
I think the physicians of North America have a huge responsibility in this direction, in the sense. See, this nation, being in many ways the most affluent nation on the planet, people have a wide variety of choices for their nourishment. When there is such a choice of nourishment, there should be no chronic ailments. Infectious ailments, if there are there, I'm sure you can deal with that. But you are spending $3 trillion in your healthcare. Bills are $3 trillion. Yes. It could sink a nation.
And it does.
It could sink a nation altogether. So, I feel the physicians of North America have this enormous responsibility that you don't try to provide health for people. You provide methodologies with which people can generate health for themselves. It's very, very important, and yoga is a very scientific tool in this direction.
Sounds good. One of the interesting things that I was reading is that your foundation actually goes and teaches yoga to prison inmates also.
It's mandatory.
That was very, very
in southern India, our engineering programs are mandatory in all the prisons. So,
is that right?
Yes, we should make it mandatory to all the doctors.
I truly agree.
Because you must be an embodiment of health.
Absolutely. Going back to your talk yesterday and in context of what we are just saying, you said that one thing, if there's one thing that people could do, which could change their life or enable their progress. So what is that one thing that each of us can do that we become better human beings?
When I use the word life, let me make clear this. When most people use the word life, if they say my life, they may be talking about their work, their home, their car, their family, their relationships, their education, their profession, something like this. These are all accessories of life. This is not life. What is throbbing here is life. Most people seem to understand that only when they're on their deathbed, that this is the real life. Okay, what's happening, what is keeping this body alive, what's making you and me speak right now, this is life, the fundamental. So I'm talking about that life. If you do not enhance the dimension of life within you, you desperately trying to enhance the your activity or the quality of your activity is like putting cart before the horse and struggling with it. The whole education systems in the world have become like this. We are trying to teach people how to excel in what they're doing. Yes, that needs to be done to some extent. But the most important thing is, if you elevate this one to a higher level state of intensity and experience than what it is right now, everything that you do will be naturally of a higher quality. Just about anything, it doesn't matter what, whether you do your physician's work or you kick a ball or you do this, you can do it better simply because life is at a higher level of possibility.
True.
That fundamental has not been attended to. If we do that, you will see human beings functioning at least 10 times better than the way they are functioning right now. You yourself, I'm saying, with your present level of education and experience. If you enhance who you are, suddenly you will find you will start functioning 10 times better as a doctor, believe me.
And I like that
without further education.
There's one thing I want to know, because the world knows now that, you know, you're called the Maverick Guru. You know, we know that you like motorcycles. I learned that you can even fly a helicopter. So, and yesterday listening to you, I heard, you know, I could see what a beautiful voice you have. So I know you can sing too. But tell me, what do you do for just for fun? Something, you know, something that just you do, not which is not work, which is just
I don't do any work in my life. I stopped working 33 years ago. Since then, I'm just doing what I really care for.
It's something frivolous or something just...
If I have an evening free and if I'm in New York, I'm at the Broadway for sure.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes.
Okay. What's your favorite show?
Well, I just saw An Act of God.
Okay. So, we always end this show with asking you one question. What is your last word on Chai with Manju? And what is your last word for our audience in Boston?
Oh, okay. I thought you were asking me what's my last word because I don't know what's coming next. I didn't know that this was an execution. My last word is just this, that in this life, we don't know if we will become the richest man on this planet or not,
mm-hmm.
or you'll climb Mount Everest or not,
mm-hmm.
or you will run faster than Mr. Bolt or not.
Uh-huh.
Whether you do those things or not is subject to many things, all mm-hmm. right? One thing must happen to you. Before you fall dead, at least uh-huh. you must know this piece of life in its entirety.
True.
If you don't even know this mm-hmm. fully, the nature of what this is, I think it's a wasted life because the purpose of life is to experience it as mm-hmm. profoundly as you can.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't want to explore the cosmos, you leave it.
Mm-hmm.
It's up to you. Mm-hmm. If you don't have inclinations for such things, leave it. Uh-huh. But at least this piece of life you must know uh-huh. in its entirety, otherwise...
Right.
In my perception, you wasted your life.
Thank you.